Go ahead and grab a seat. How are we doing? Good?
Last session of the day, a little tired, your brain's a little fried. Yeah?
Yeah, you're like, oh, yeah.
Ready to go? Not, what? Not yet? Good, because we're going to fill it a little bit more. It'll be a good thing. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Stephen Rose. I am a senior product marketing manager with the Windows team. I'm also the IT Pro Community Manager. For those of you that have visited the Springboard series on TechNet, our Windows 7, Windows 8 zones, visited the Windows TechNet forums, Springboard series Insider, Windows team blog, any of those, you might have seen my name on them. And my role, kind of at the highest level, is really to connect IT pros to the people and resources at Microsoft to help you do your jobs easier. I spent 15 years as an IT pro, all my own company, MVP, all the good stuff. And when we started talking about TechEd this year, I was actually having a frustrating day with some bad boot times, and we started chatting. We said, hey, what if we got some of the guys from MSIT and MS Services involved to talk about what it takes to get a machine to boot up in a reasonable amount of time and why it doesn't and how to troubleshoot and go through that. So by a show of hands, how many of you have had issues with a machine that does not boot up in an appropriate amount of time? Raise your hand. Then you're in the right room, which is good. For those of you who didn't raise your hand, now's the time to leave quietly before everybody else stares at you. No. So, but we also thought it'd be great to do this a little bit more of an interactive session because you guys have been to a lot of very, very formal people standing there like this, talking like this all day. So I thought it'd be great, but I thought, you know, I bring these guys up, I thought it'd be great to introduce them and sort of lead the conversation. And it's also an opportunity for you guys, when we get to the right points, for you to ask your questions. But we're going to show you some great tools to help you figure this out, what to dig into, and how to take a look at this. So I brought Matt and Vadim with me. So Matt, I'll start with you. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So my name is Matt Reynolds. I know a bunch of folks in the audience, so glad to see your faces. For the rest of you, I'll hope to get a chance to meet you tonight or whatever the case may be. I am, let's see, this introduction, right?
So, it's kind of an introduction.
Well, I love long walks on the beach and romantic comedies. That's a terrible introduction. Yeah, I don't really like either of those things. I'm by trade an Active Directory guy, not a Windows client guy. So for years, I've been specializing in the Active Directory space, huge, you know, dealing with the largest of the large customers around the world. And, you know, Microsoft Certified Master, I teach at that program. I've developed a lot of the diagnostic tools that Microsoft Services use to work on Active Directory, and that's all well and good. And then one day, I followed the trail down from Active Directory to the client, you know, whether it's authentication or group policy, whatever you want to call it, and realized that we had this huge problem with boot performance, and this has taken over my life ever since. So we'll talk more about that in a moment.
How does your wife feel about that, that's just taking over? That just strangers walk up to you and say, here's my laptop, make it good again, yeah?
Yeah, people want me to heal their laptop. Once they find out that I'm the boot performance guy, it's like, I think that we should have a religious ceremony. I might need some candles and some chickens. Does anybody have a working knowledge of Latin in here? All week, when people find out I'm the boot guy, they want me to heal their laptop. But we'll see some cool examples of what goes wrong in the enterprise and what you can do to heal your enterprise.
All right, Vadim.
All right, so my name is Vadim Arakhlov, and I am a program manager at Microsoft IT. And over the last 18 months, my primary focus has been around boot performance optimization internally for Microsoft. And many of you might think, you guys probably don't have any boot performance issues. We're actually in the same boat as everyone else, and we do have a lot of problems. So, and I'm here today really to tell you our experience of how we handle those problems and where we are today.
So now the great thing is that when we get products, we get them before you do. And we get crappy, not full code working products that we have problems with. So the great thing is, by the time we've gotten through all the dog foods and all the builds, which I have to tell you, internally we have a dog food alias and early products like Office and things like that, are pushed out to us very, very early. So we have thousands and thousands of users. When Windows 7 came out, we had 60% of the company on it within a few weeks. I mean, the amount of time we push this stuff out is tremendous. So these guys have a lot of work to do very, very quickly, but we've gone through this so many times. By the time it gets to you guys, we've worked out a lot of those issues. So some of the good things. So why does Microsoft care about boot performance? Who wants to take that one? Why do we care? I mean, besides the these guys care. But.
Yeah, no, I'll let you know why. So, number one thing is user productivity. We did this small calculation based on basically if we take about 88,000 employees we got.
Yep.
If we take 88,000 employees and consider that they would reboot once a day.
It was a couple of times a week in that calculation.
Or a few times a week, yeah. We are actually looking, and if we reduce boot time by about 30 seconds, over the working calendar's days, we're probably looking at about a little bit over $11 million in productivity gains. So, yeah, we do care about boot performance. We also care about boot performance because of our customers.
So do we have a bar? Do we have like a magic number that we look for internally or that folks should look at to go, I mean, how do you tell a good boot from a bad boot?
I think I can take that one.
Yeah.
I'd be happy to hear from you as well. I don't think there's a magic number. I think it's all about before and after. It's where you're coming from and where you can get to. There are shops out there. So thinking about a clean Windows machine, you install clean Windows from a DVD. You reboot it a couple times so it does its automatic defragging and stuff. It's pretty well optimized. It's going to boot, depending on the hardware, from 10 to 30 seconds. And that's all the way through boot, logged on, idle, fully responsive. You go into the enterprise, by the time you layer on antivirus and all this other stuff, management tools, scripts, you name it, line of business applications, to the point about the magic number, there are enterprises out there who are at 6 minutes today. And they'd be thrilled to get down to three. There are enterprises out there that are 3 minutes, and they'd be thrilled to get down to one. There are enterprises out there at 1 minute, and they'd be thrilled to get down to 45 seconds. So I think the key thing is, rather than focusing on some magic number, focus on being the guy with the after picture. Be, the extreme makeover in your enterprise. And I can tell you, I've seen this multiple times now, because I go around visiting enterprise customers. If you go down this path, you will be the hero in your environment. This has happened in my own career when I switched from Active Directory to client stuff. Even though I was, well-known in the Active Directory world, suddenly I'm working on client. I'm getting meetings with my boss's 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 boss to talk about this. There's a lot of pent-up demand for this. I've seen the same thing happen to my customers. Customers, individual engineers that have taken up this torch at their companies and run with it and said, hey, we're going to solve boot performance. We're going to see what's going on, and we're going to take stuff out of the boot path. Then suddenly they start having meetings with their boss's 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 boss to show off what they've done. So rather than a magic number, it's about figure out where you are today, look inside the boot process, which is what we're going to see in this session, and then figure out where you can get to in a reasonable amount of time.
Or to get people from a cup of coffee down to just a shot of espresso.
Right,
if
yes.
If we work
exactly.
In our title here.
Yes, yes.
I got that works. All right, so what are the three things? So for those of you out there going, is this the right session to sit in? What are the three things that folks should take away today? We'll come back at the end, and we'll see if we have truly landed this in the eyes of our audience.
Good man. So for me, what I hope to express to you in this session is, A, you can do this. We all throw our hands up and do sort of psychic debugging and brainstorming. Oh, it's group policy, or
it is a blame
else.
Game.
Oh,
it's antivirus. The network, it's the system, it's the Windows, it's the server.
Yeah. Stop it. The instrumentation exists in Windows. We've done all this work in Windows to build in the instrumentation. So you can open up the hood and you can see exactly what's going on. You can see what the delays are. And so what I want you to walk out of here with is the sense of empowerment. To feel empowered, to open the hood, see what the delays are, and then go after them to be that hero in your enterprise.
All right. So let's get to it.
Okay.
We got slides. We got demos. What are we going to show first?
We are going to, first of all, set up our unit of measurement, is the, where's our clicker here? So let me let these videos play in the background just so you understand that we feel your pain while we talk about this. We have a nice, clean installed machine on one side and sort of more of a typical enterprise startup and log-on experience on the other side. Now, it's we can poke fun at it. And we can say, oh, isn't that funny that it's so slow? Or we can say, well, it's no big deal. They're just going to go get a coffee anyway, right? But what if this is your CEO's laptop? And she just rebooted at the last minute before a huge presentation to Wall Street analysts because she's been getting a nag thing that says, please reboot, you know, and ignoring it for 3 days. And now finally wants to get a nice clean start, so reboots at the last minute, you know, before this important call. Or what if it's somebody coming in to do, you know, an important transaction? We all have work to do. That's why we have our PCs on. So to me, this is a big deal, and I don't want us to wait at that. So let's get to why coffees. Coffee is a precise unit of measurement. How long it takes to drink a coffee. There's an internationally agreed upon standard.
Espresso is shorter, latte, or then you have cappuccino, latte, and then a full cup of coffee.
And the amount of time for each one is you know, very well agreed upon. If you drink it too fast or too slow, you're violating the standard. So stop it.
What about tea?
Tea cannot be considered.
Okay, well,
I'm ashamed that you brought that up. No, really, where this came from is our colleague, Peter Vigleven, who lives in Amsterdam. He said, one morning I sat down and I decided to time how long it takes to drink a cup of coffee. And it turns out for him to drink a cup of coffee is 150 seconds.
And he also has no tongue or sense of heat anymore as well.
Well, keep it, this is a European coffee, European, so it might be a little smaller, yeah. I don't think this is the Starbucks super whatever, big gulp.
Right, okay.
So he came up with 150 seconds, and he thought this was a good way to express the experience because, I'm quoting him directly here, we Dutch love our coffee. That must be why we have so many coffee shops in Amsterdam.
For those of you going to Tech Ed Amsterdam, you can tell us if it's true or not.
Okay, so let's lift the hood. Let's see what's going on and what we're waiting for. To do that, we're going to use a set of tools called the Windows Performance Toolkit, which are part of the Windows ADK, or the Assess and Deploy Toolkit. So to get these tools, the most recent version of these tools, all you need to do is go to your favorite search engine and type Windows 8 ADK release preview. How many typos did I get? None. Well, how about that? And our first hit is the Assess and Deploy Toolkit.
Which can be found on the Springboard series on TechNet.
Oh, good man. Download this. You can install it on a Windows 8 machine or a Windows 7 machine to do this work. Now, there's a whole lot in the ADK that we're not going to cover. There's all kinds of cool automation, and you can set up lab scenarios where it images the machines and then analyzes them. So you can explore that later. What I want to show you now is just how can you install it on one machine and just analyze it right now. So you just you download it, you install it, and then I'll show the process of gathering the boot trace on this VM. Once the tools are installed, under Windows Kits, you'll have this Windows Performance Recorder. This is a wonderful multi-purpose tool for being a black box and recording what's going on in Windows from a performance standpoint during any number of scenarios, including boot. So you choose your scenario, which in this case will be boot, choose the number of iterations, in this case we'll just do one. If you want to focus on different data gathering areas, you can do that here. Oh, one moment. You can tell it to focus on, gather more information about disk activity or CPU activity or whatever you feel like you want to focus on. And then you click start. So pretty straightforward. This used to be lots of command lines and complication, but it's very straightforward now. You can type a description of what your scenario is. For me, the description is X. Click Save, and then it goes ahead and reboots your machine. What it's done is told Windows, on the next boot, trace everything. And then after it boots and after you log on, it comes back and cleans up everything, saves the resulting file in a format that you can analyze. And so we've got a trace file. Now, you know, in cooking shows, when they walk up to the oven and there's already one cooked, so rather than waiting for this to go through and logging on and mistyping my password and so forth, I'm just going to skip right to the trace file. But it's really as simple as I just showed. After it comes up and I log on, I just click stop. And the trace looks like this. It's an ETL file, stands for Event Trace Log. And now what we're going to see is wherever, when I originally clicked record or start, there was a path. You could tell it what path you wanted. By default,
desktop,
it goes
desktop, wherever you want.
Yeah, by default, it goes into your documents folder. But you can put it wherever you want.
And thank you for taking notes.
Now what we're going to do is use a relatively clean machine that doesn't have any terrible boot problems to familiarize us all and get oriented of what does the boot look like? What are the key components of boot, and therefore what could go wrong? The first graph that we'll take a look at is called boot phases. This is, by the way, the tool that I've opened this is called Windows Performance Analyzer. I just double-clicked on the ETL file, and it automatically opened in Windows Performance Analyzer. And it has this logic in it called boot phases that divides the boot into these sub-phases. The first couple of phases, the pre-session init and session init, are where we're doing core OS stuff, like loading the kernel, loading boot start drivers, and then starting services. The win logon init phase, we're starting more services, and we're going through things like authenticating the machine account, doing group policy, logging on the user. Once the user's logged on, we move to the explore init phase. And that's where the user's been authenticated, but we're still building their desktop. And then once the user is logged on, so in this case at the 18-second mark, the user's logged on and their desktop appears. But, as we all know from experience, how many of you have a machine that's immediately responsive after you log on? Everything works, there's no, you know, hourglasses or spinning donuts or the wheel of weight or whatever you want to call that thing. How many of you have a machine that's instantly responsive as soon as you log on? Not even one? Okay, so that's why, oh, Mark does. Okay, very good. Ah, I was waiting for that. I've been having this conversation all week. I was ready for it. So for that reason, in the boot phase's logic, we include that post-logon phase. So in other words, if the machine is still busy after you got logged on, we include that in this post-boot phase. So from this, I want to determine how quick was this logon, or how quick was this boot. And it looks like I got logged on, again, at about 18 seconds. And then typically the machine is responsive after you've logged on, and then disk I.O. drops off, right? I think we've all experienced that. And so to illustrate that, I'm going to add in a disk utilization graph. And I'll zoom in on this region. And we can see that lines up pretty well. We've got, once we got to the desktop, which was around 18 seconds, disk I.O. also dropped off. Remember, this is a clean, well-performing machine. And so then we were pretty much ready to go at around 18, 20 seconds. Now, the post-boot logic, the reason why it still goes another 10 seconds, is because the way that it tries to determine when you've reached an idle desktop is it waits for 10 seconds of idle time, and then it says, okay, well, it must be really responsive now. So you could sort of subtract those 10 seconds off if you wanted. You could say this machine was good to go at around 20 seconds. Now, we very quickly glanced over boot, loading drivers, loading services, all of that. So let's back up a little bit and see just a tiny bit more detail around that. One of the key things that goes on during boot is the loading of services. And we have a wonderful visualization for that. And I'll explain what this is. So in all of these graphs, the x-axis is time, going toward the right. And then the y-axis, you know, varies from graph to graph. In this case, the y-axis doesn't mean anything. It just tried to arrange them however it could arrange them based on when they happened. For each service that starts up, it has to go through a process of Windows telling it to start, and then it come back and saying, yeah, okay, I started. The guidelines for developing services are that you're not supposed to do any work during that time. You're supposed to turn right around and say, yeah, I started, and then go do whatever work you're going to do. Because if you wait, Windows will wait for you, which means the whole system could get slowed down by one service that fails to turn around and tell Windows, yeah, I started. So what we see here, and let me zoom in on these to get a little bit better view. And I'll zoom way in. So these now look like they're slow, but we're zoomed in so far that they're really not. For each service, there's a couple of dots and a gray bar that connects the dots. That time span is the whole time from when Windows first said, hey, service, please start, and when the service came back and said, okay, I'm ready. So what you want is for that to be really, really short. In fact, when we zoomed out, it was so short that you couldn't even really see the gray bars. All you could see were dots. It was because those services started very, very quickly. Again, remember, this is a well-performing machine. But you can guess already that we're going to see some that are less well-performing. Unzoom. So there we have a nice view of services. It's a nice way to orient. You can kind of see what's started and what's not as you progress through the boot process. The next graph that we're going to refer to in this session, so I'll introduce it here, is process lifetimes. And this shows when each process on the machine began and ended. And because there are lots of processes at boot, it's usually easier to just look at when they began and ignore when they ended. And this is very straightforward. It's just a red dot for each process that started. So you can say, okay, there are the processes that started, and this is what a clean boot looks like. It's 20 or so processes starting over 18 or 20 seconds, and some of these are actually background things that started after the user logged on, like Windows Search. Okay, everybody feeling oriented? Are you ready to see some terrible, disastrous examples? Do you feel like if I put some more of these charts up here where things were really stretched out and really horrible, you'd understand what I was showing you? Anybody, any questions about this before we move on? I think we could have time to handle it.
And we have mics and everything, so if you do, just stand up, go up to the mic, and we'll grab you when we see you there.
Okay.
All right.
So everybody's
Let's see some bad.
Everybody's feeling oriented then. You know what the graphs mean. Yes. Sure.
Can you repeat the question so everybody can hear?
Oh, all right. Good point. The question was, is there a list of standard services that are built into Windows? There's a couple of different pieces to that. There's one, you could use this tool or auto runs to see, you know, which ones are signed with a Windows certificate. Those are going to be core OS services. Or you could just compile a list from a given machine. There isn't necessarily like a list on TechNet because it can vary. It depends on what roles you have installed and what features you have installed. So the main thing I would look for is either in here you can go in and look at the image details, or similarly like in auto runs, you could see which ones are signed with the Windows certificate. Does that answer the question? Okay.
Question.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Is the number after this the process ID?
It sure is.
The amount of time?
Process ID. The question was, is the number after the process name the process ID? And the answer is C. Okay, so we're oriented. We're moving
on.
We're going to see some disasters.
Mr. Manassi.
Where's the question? Oh.
When I see two processes one after the other, does that mean the dependency LSAS and Explorer, or is that just the way it's represented?
On the process graph, similar to the services graph, the y-axis doesn't mean anything. It just is how it could fit them in based on when they started. So if you were to zoom in, you'd see they shift up and down. So you could infer a dependency based on when they started, but this doesn't necessarily demonstrate a dependency. You can, however, go into the details of this, and we will in a minute, and actually show who started who. Okay, moving on then. Let's see some disasters.
So is this one of those examples where we could drink a whole cup of coffee while we were waiting for this to come out?
Yep. Switch back. About that. Okay, our first example is called the case of look at me, look at me. Well, enjoy this one. This is by the way, just to set your expectations about what you're seeing here, everything that you're seeing here are based on real world support cases or consulting cases that we've handled in Microsoft Services. In some cases, it's the real data that's been anonymized, so you'll see gray bars and things. In other cases, it's to reproduce the behavior internally, and so you'll see like Contoso domain names in here, but that doesn't mean it's not meaningful. We were reproducing a customer scenario.
What size customer is this that we're taking a look at? Is it an enterprise scenario, more of a small to mid-size?
Well, I think that these types of scenarios are going to happen across customer segments.
Okay.
My specialty tends to be larger customers, and so that's where most of my examples come from.
And what server and operating system are we looking at in this one that we're about to take a look at?
So in this case, it's Windows 7 client,
yep.
And the rest of the infrastructure won't matter very much once you see what the problem is.
Okay.
So this is a Windows 7 case, and in fact, just remember which customer this is here. Oh yeah, so this is a really tech-savvy company. They had a lot of cutting-edge stuff. They developed a lot of their own in-house software. They had a lot of cool web stuff. They were on top of it. Big company, you know, innovative shop, and they realized that they had a boot performance problem. And similar to the numbers Vadim threw out earlier for Microsoft IT, they had figured out that they were losing millions of dollars a year because of boot performance, but they had no idea why. No one had opened the hood. And so we opened the hood, and they were very surprised by what we found. I have screenshots of all of these so that you can go through them later, but I'm going to do a couple of them live so that you see me moving around the tool. I feel like people resonate more with that. So I'll do this one live, or rather in the actual tool. Okay, here's our boot phases graph.
Hang on, we have to switch over.
Oh, good catch.
There you go.
Here's our boot phases graph. Okay, so somebody tell me, how long was this boot? Yeah. Okay, when
two
did
coffees,
the
nicely done.
When did the desktop appear? About 1:30. Yeah, about 1:30 or whatever that is. And then went idle a little bit after that. So it looks like most of our problem in this one is before the desktop appeared. Once the desktop appeared, we got to idle quite quickly. The first thing, the most common cause, and therefore the first thing to look for in a slow boot scenario, is disk utilization. So the first thing I'll do is throw up a disk utilization graph. And oh dear. So the disk is completely saturated for most of this time. So right away, there's other cool things I could do in here. I could go look at threads and processes. But right away, I know I've found the bulk of the problem. It's disk utilization. But by whom and for what? How do I fix this? I know the disk light is blinking, but how do I fix it? Well, I can highlight all this disk utilization, right-click, say summary table, and it's going to show me all of the disk I/O. Actually, before I do that, let me show you something else, this detail graph. We've actually recorded every single disk I/O, what process did it, what file it was, and even what was the offset on the disk. We have this incredibly low-level debug kernel-level information, but most of us don't care about that. And so the beauty of Windows Performance Analyzer, part of the ADK tools, this is what I'm using now, is that it takes that low-level kernel information and rolls it up into useful representations, such as this. Summary table. Oh, look at this. I can see all the disk I/O by location. So it looks like most of the disk I/O is to C, naturally enough. And if I expand down here, I see that most of the disk I/O, I spent about 66 seconds during that highlight servicing disk I/O. Those are microseconds, I believe. So it winds up to be 66 seconds. Of those, if you add up the first two rows, corp messaging and corp messaging staged, that's about 60. And, you know, Windows was 2. To put that in perspective, you know, so the whole OS loading, all the drive, you know, all the security stuff, the firewall service, all of that was 2, and this other stuff was 60. So what on earth is corp messaging? Maybe this is some kind of innovative message passing service, maybe a message queuing service for doing financial transactions. I don't know, but let's find out. I can never remember which of the arrows is the right one when you have this zooming mode on. Corp video updates. What on earth is corp video updates? And the files involved are system, which you'll often see is associated with file I/O, and robocopy. What's going on here? Well, now we know what we're copying, but we still don't really know why. So let's go see what we can find out about this robocopy instance. So its PID is 2424. So I'm going to close the disk summary table, and I'm going to go look at processes. So I'll turn on the processes graph. This is the same processes graph we saw earlier. Only this time it has more processes in it, including lots of instances of robocopy. There's similarly a detailed table here. So if I can go to process summary table and see lifetimes and command lines of all of these. So let's find our instance of robocopy 2424, and let's see what it was doing. Look at this. It's command line. It's copying stuff from where to where? From our two favorite folders. Okay. Well, we still don't really know why, so let's see who its parent was. Thank you, Mark, for foreshadowing this part of it.
So its parent is 2124. So let's go find 2124. CMD. All right. Well, that doesn't tell us very much. But what about its command line? Download executive video messages. And we can further trace back the parent processes to find out who ultimately launched this. In this trace, again, this is a reproduction trace, so it was a group policy startup script. In the real case, it was actually a dedicated client agent service that they had on the machine to do this. Doesn't matter. What matters is that we're doing a lot of disk I.O., and who's doing it and why. So it turns out that at this company, the executives record a series of video messages for all the employees every week. And instead of sticking them on a web server where people could stream them on demand, they actually had an agent that they had bought that would download these things on every boot. So that was their disk I.O. They switched to a different delivery mechanism, and their boot times shrunk down to less than a minute. What do you think? Is this good information?
Yeah.
Okay. How hard did that seem? Does it seem accessible? Do you feel like if I showed you a few more examples, you'd be able to walk out of here and do a trace on your own machine?
Can we go back and charge you $100 for this tool? Because it's free now. If you like it that much, I'll let marketing know. So, you know.
All right. So let's do another example. Before we do that.
So we'll switch back. So we have our next case, which is about our LED burning, which I love.
So, by the way, again, I'm going to fast forward through these, but you're not missing anything. This is just exactly what we did, but they're in here as a backup, and so you can review them later.
And the deck is available on TechEd Online, but it will not be available till after Amsterdam, so you're going to have to wait 2 weeks to get it, because we don't want to make all the decks available before the next TechEd. So you have to wait till after TechEd Amsterdam.
The lesson learned here is, wherever possible, decouple work from boot. There was work that needed... I don't know, maybe put an asterisk by needed, but there was work to be done, but it didn't need to be done at boot. So decouple work from boot. And the other lesson learned here is that high disk I.O. is the number one killer of disk performance, so just go see what's doing the disk I.O.
Any questions before we go to our next case? Good? All right, let's do another one.
Okay. So this one is the case of, is my disk LED burning?
I like this one.
In this case, the user could drink 2 cups of coffee before they were able to use their machines. And this was actually a call center environment. And in a call center environment, it's very important that people are at work at the right times, right? Because they have all these shifts that have elaborate overlaps, and they have coverage and SLAs. And so it's very important that people can work at starting at just the right time. And there was a whole shift of people that were supposed to start at 8 a.m., well, not only was it important for the company meeting their SLAs, for everybody to be able to ready to work at 8 a.m., it was also important for the employees' paychecks. Because the way their timekeeping worked is once you got logged onto your machine, there was an application that auto-ran and clocked you in, basically. So during these 2 coffees, the customers were not being serviced and the employees were not being paid. So you can imagine this was a pretty intense situation. What they did as a workaround is the employees had come up with a rotation. So every day, a different employee would come in early and turn on all the PCs so that they would be ready when all their colleagues got there. But that wasn't good enough because it still took a long time to log on. And so then they started sharing their passwords, and that's when the company finally decided to take some action on this. This is a quickie. You'll love this one. We only have about 2 or 3 screenshots that cover this one. Again, high disk I.O. You're going to see this over and over when you do traces. So desktop appears at around 135. We go idle at about 185. And high disk I.O. the whole time. So we go look at that disk I.O. table, like the same one we just saw a few minutes ago. And it wasn't one file or one process. Or rather, it wasn't one process. It seemed to be a little bit all over the place. But the one file that was really hot was... We zoom in for the people in the back.
Zoom in on that one.
I have to remember which machine I'm on. Oh, I'm on this machine.
I don't know if you can on that one.
Yeah, I installed Zoomit.
Oh, there you go.
Pagefile.sys. Well, that's weird. Why are we doing a lot of I.O. to pagefile.sys during boot? I should clarify one other note about the story here. We actually worked on this one remotely. We didn't go on site with the customer. And we were assured by their account management and so forth that this was a really modern environment. It was practically a showcase for all the latest Microsoft technologies. And, you know, they were running the latest version of SharePoint, everything under the sun. You know, this place was really a showcase for Microsoft technologies, and we better make it right. So we gave them instructions remotely on how to gather the trace, and they did it, thankfully. And when we got the trace, one of the cool things about these tools is they don't just gather the disk I/O and the CPU, they also gather some high-level information about the system, such as services and drivers and some other things. And we found this. So there are two interesting things in here. First of all, this was not the latest QFE release of Windows 7, as we were promised. And the second thing is this. Like I said, this is a quickie. You know, we could all solve this one in just a couple of minutes, right? But having the data, I mean, they knew this. They'd been living with this hardware. But once we could show them the data, once we could show them all the, you know, the IO to pagefile.sys, then that finally got the ball rolling in the direction it needed to go. By the way, this is the moment. I'm casting a lot of blame here, but this is the moment where I turn it around on us. This KB article is still live. If you want to go check it out. It's maybe one of those cases where you might want to look past our guidance.
All right, so we've seen a one cup of coffee, we've seen a two, now we're going to take a look at a three.
Yeah. Any quick questions before we move on? We'll have some time for Q&A at the end, but if you have questions that are specific to these scenarios, we can take just a little bit of time as we go. Sort of. You have to jump through, you have to use an older version of the tool and you have to jump through some hoops. Which? The question was, the first question was, can you run this on XP? Shame on you all for asking questions about Windows XP. the question was, can you run the tool on XP? There's an older version of the tool that was from the Windows 7 timeframe, where what we've been talking about is the one from the Windows 8.80K, that if you extracted it out, you could sort of run it on XP with some help from Microsoft support. So I would say if you're trying to do this on XP, just call Microsoft support, open up a case. We've got a whole workflow that we can run through.
Or in the spirit of helping you. AKA the tool will only work for another 18 months, so yeah. We'll just throw that
in the spirit of getting you from XP to Windows 8. Yeah. Okay. Any other questions about that one before we move on?
The good thing is if people are starting to play with Windows 8, this tool will work with Windows 8, and you can start to play with it on that too.
Oh, yeah. It's incredibly rich. It has all kinds of, it's tuned very much to the instrumentation in Windows 8 and to a lesser extent in Windows 7.
So you can start to test those builds out now if you want, as you're starting to maybe do a pilot.
And in fact, when I mentioned earlier that there's all kinds of other stuff in the ADK, you can do all kinds of automation and lab testing. That stuff is really well tuned for Windows 8. You can have it go through this whole automated workflow in the lab to test out your images and generate reports. It's super fancy. But again, I think the good starting point is how can I just install this on one machine and try it out? That's why we're starting here. You can feel free to play around with the rest of the ADK later. Okay, so the next case is the case of the swarm. Oh, yeah. I have to remind myself of which environment these came from. So in this case, the user could drink three cups of coffee before getting to work. And my favorite thing about this scenario is that there was actually a person there who, instead of drinking three cups of coffee, brought in yarn and needles and was knitting a sweater every morning while the machine booted up. And I know what you're thinking. It was not Steven.
I'm not good at the knit and purl thing. It's just not good for me.
Okay. Once again, massive disk I.O. What's our log on here? How many seconds are we at on there? 350 seconds, I think. So we logged on at 350 seconds, and we get idle at about 450 seconds. So, yeah, we're definitely up into the three coffee range at this point, at least at
Peter's face.
Right.
Yeah. You have to have no taste buds.
And correct.
No nerves left in your mouth. Okay, so we've seen that we've played this game before, right? What's different about this one? What's different about this one is that when you go to the process table, or the the disk I/O table, like we've done a few times now, there wasn't anything that stood out. There wasn't a hot file. There wasn't a hot process. It was just a million little things. So we went over to look at the process table to see what processes were starting, the process graph, which is what I'll show you next. And before I show you that process graph, let me remind you that a few minutes ago we saw one of a clean boot. And to help remind you, here's one from another environment. This is an actual production enterprise environment with antivirus and everything installed that's pretty reasonable. It's 30 or so processes. It's not that far off from a clean install. So that's a reasonable number of processes to start on boot. Now, going back to the machine with the 3 coffee log on time. In this case, it's not a bad thing that it's hard to see, because it kind of drives the point home, right? But I do want to zoom in, and in fact, I should probably zoom in even further. And we see that we've got scripts, launching executable tools, launching other scripts. I don't know why we had to call PowerCFG so many times. I mean, how many different power plans does this machine have? I don't know. But, something's gone haywire here. We'll zoom back out. It's around, I think I counted them up, it's around 200 processes that are starting during boot over the course of the 3 coffees. And you might say, well, that's a ridiculous, absurd example. That would never happen at my company. We see this all the time. This is the norm. If you trace your machine from a large enterprise environment or any kind of environment where there's lots of management agents and scripts and things, it will look like this. So just to show you that that's not the outlier example, here's another environment. Again, about 150 processes there. But the graph kept going up, and it wouldn't fit on the slide. So we cut it off and moved it over. And it's actually, there's another and there's another one. And the swarm. We tried fitting it all in. We had to make it sideways. That's actually everything in one shot. This took some MS Paint work to get that all stitched together. Okay, so what lesson can we take away from this? This is not an easy fix. Unless it just happened to be one rogue script that was launching PowerCFG 10,000 times. What this is the accumulated mass of configuration vectors that have grown up in the environment over the years. And so what we had to recommend to this customer was a rationalization and maturation project to say, look, how many different configuration vectors do you want to have for your desktop? You've got group policy, you've got configuration manager, you've got hundreds of scripts, you've got other stuff, you've got applications that are writing things. Would it make sense to, take a step back, look at what everybody's requirements are, and use fewer configuration vectors in a way that's managed and that can be sustainable and that can have its performance impact measured and contained? So the first two cases that I gave you were easy fixes. They shrunk their boot times right down just by making one change. This one, they're still working on it. It's going to take some time to work their way through, but they're making progress. And actually, when Vadim tells the Microsoft IT story for boot performance, there's a great part in there about maturation and testing, and so we'll look forward to that.
Does that come from part of the, we've always done it this way, so we just keep doing it and nobody ever questions why?
Yeah.
Which we find with a lot of deployment processes as well, that people don't, it's just, oh, that's the way we've always done it, and it just keeps getting handed down.
Right. So there's that, absolutely. And also different teams just working independently, right?
Right.
So the configuration manager team was doing some stuff, and the scripting team was doing some stuff, and the group policy team was doing some stuff, and nobody had taken a step back and said, what do we want our desktop to look like? What's our end result? And how many different configuration vectors do we need to use to get there? Okay, so before we move on to the next example, I want a sanity check here. You feeling good about this? Is this good information? Okay, all right.
As you go along, are you feeling more or less empowered to go try this on your own machines? Are you getting scared yet? Scared in a good way, like I want to go see it, or scared like I don't think I can?
If anybody does get one where you have to turn the slide sideways, send it to us. We'd love to take a look at that. You can scrub out your company information. So I'd say somebody came, because we'll do sessions like this. We had somebody that came last year. This was what they saw. And then send us the before and after.
That's a great idea.
The before and after. You know, here I am, and then I, you know, look, here I am. I'm wearing my husband's pants, and I can fit in one leg, like one of those.
Right. Yeah, so it's going back to the idea of being scared. It might be the good kind of scared, right? It's like horror movie scared. It's like, I'm scared to watch that movie, but I'm going to watch it. All right, so I have two more demos to give you, and then we're going to switch to the Microsoft IT story on boot performance. And this one is a doozy. This is what I call the 13-minute triple play, featuring the 10-minute unintended consequence, the productivity maximizer, and the slow profile. So there are multiple delays, which is typical of a large complex image, and the delays are long, 13 minutes. The story on this is actually a pretty innovative company. They're pretty up to date. They're running Windows 7, and they even had some good hotfixes installed. They're running SP1, and everything was good and happy. But over the years, things had declined. They had gone from having a pretty quick system to systems that were 2 or 3 minutes to log on. So that was bad, but it wasn't bad enough to prompt them to take any action. They were just living with it. But then one day, and at this company, this day is still known as Black Thursday, the boot time jumped from 2 to 3 minutes to 13 minutes. And then they called us. So here's the trace. And again, this is one that we've reproduced internally, so that it'll say Contoso all over it. What do you prefer? Do you want to see the highlights in the screenshots, or do you want me to walk through it in the tool? Any pin?
Tool. The tool it is.
All right. I never remember which one it is. Oh, HDMI.
Yep.
Okay, so here we are with the 13-minute triple play. So around the 800-second mark, we get logged on. The good news is, once we got to the desktop, man, we were there. So you must be thinking, surely something was churning the disk for 13 minutes, and you'll be surprised to see that it was not. Disk utilization wasn't too bad. That blue spike is background I.O., so we don't really care about that. So after the first few seconds, the disk I.O. is not very high. So maybe the CPU, maybe something was just spinning the CPU. Nope, not really. So we've now entered a different kind of analysis. Everything that we've done up to this point was resource exhaustion. We have no more capacity to do disk I.O. in a given time. In this case, it's not resource exhaustion. We're waiting for something. And that's a different kind of analysis. And you can get really detailed with that. You can do wait analysis and figure out that this thread is waiting for that thread. If anybody wants to talk about that sort of ninja level stuff, come see me in the hallway because I can give you some cool examples. But you don't have to get to that level of depth. Sometimes you can just pick out what's waiting on what right in the graphs. Let's do that here. Which phase is our longest here? Win log on. Remember, that's group policy, profile loading, authentication, all of that stuff. The good news is there's a win log on specific graph. So let's look at that to see what took a long time within win log on. And as we scroll along here, we'll tour this win log on phase because it's so long, we see that we actually have three different delays. The first one says GP client. So this is where win log on was waiting on the group policy client. And I go, it's group policy, right? Every boot problem, we always assume it's group policy. And usually group policy is the victim. And we'll see some examples of that here. But in any case, we were certainly waiting on the group policy client, so we'll explore that. Then we can also, can anybody make out the next delay? Is it big enough? Might need to zoom in further. The profiles will get you. You cannot escape the profiles.
Brought to you in 3D.
That's the user profile service loading the user's profile as they logged on. Maybe might seem inconsequential in relation to 13 minutes, but there's still a good 20 seconds there, or 18 seconds or so. So we're going to want to see what's going on there. And then we have this guy from around, what is that, 180-ish seconds to around 790-ish seconds. Again, group policy client. Ha! It's always group policy's fault. Well, in this case, we'll see why we were waiting so long for group policy. So let's explore this first one. I'll zoom into the group policy area, and then I'll highlight just exactly the group policy time, and I'll clone that selection across all the graphs so I can go look for things that align with that. Who's heard of always wait for the network when,
what is the setting called?
Always wait for the network at computer startup and log on. Yeah. So group policy can either apply in synchronous mode or asynchronous mode. What does that mean? Any volunteers? Yeah, pretty much. Group policy can either block you while it runs, and keep you from getting to the desktop, or it can let you get to the desktop and do its work in the background. That's the essential core of synchronous mode versus asynchronous mode. Many enterprises run group policy in synchronous mode because it makes group policy troubleshooting simpler, and as a result, they wind up waiting for all kinds of things, like waiting for the network to initialize. Here's an example of that. So group policy client is delayed for about 54 seconds, and during that time, let's go look at the services graph. Looks like there's a service that failed to start for just about that exact same period of time called Productivity Agent.
Which is funny because there's no productivity going on at all.
When I asked them, what does Productivity Agent do? They looked at each other for a while and said, it's a service that enhances productivity. Notice what services start right after Productivity Agent. The DHCP, DNS client, it's called DNS cache, and other networking related services like LM hosts. So this whole time, group policy wasn't doing anything. It was just waiting for the network. This is really, really, really common. It's not necessarily always caused by a service. It could be caused by a dodgy DHCP server in a coffee shop. It could be caused by anything that delays the network in being initialized and group policy being in synchronous mode. So be very careful with synchronous mode group policy, because it's called wait. The first word in the title of the thing that turns it on is wait. Now, there's some corresponding evidence for this. If we go look in the group policy event log from about that same time, I'll come back to that one, we find these two events. Is async processing false? That means we're in synchronous mode or wait for the network mode. And we waited for about 51,000 milliseconds, which was just the amount of time it took for that productivity agent service to start. So it's trying to tell us, hey, you asked me to wait, and I waited. So be very careful about using synchronous mode group policy, or always wait for the network mode. Now let's find our next delay. I'm going to accelerate a little bit here. Anybody remember the next one? Profile. Oh, I've got to zoom out. Okay, again, I'm going to zoom to this area of the profile. And there are two ways to go about troubleshooting this one. One is involves a bit of ninja-ing with looking at threads and which threads are waiting on which other threads. It's really cool, but it takes a while and it feels a little advanced. So if you want to see that one, stop me in the hallway or at a party tonight or whatever the case may be. But there's a much simpler one. And that is, we know when this happened. From this trace, we learned that there was a profile delay at such and such time. Even that small, small piece of information is way more than we knew before. We had no idea that that was part of the problem before. And just knowing that there's a profile delay at around this time allows us to do something like casually look in the event log for the user profile service, which conveniently informs us that we spent about that many seconds reconciling the user's roaming profile. Okay, now we know. Either get rid of the roaming profile or do something to make it perform better. One thing they could do to make it perform better is in this event log that I've blacked out is actually the name of the roaming profile server where we're downloading this stuff from. So we decided to ping it. All right, the last one, the third of the triple play. 600 seconds, GP client seems to be sitting there. Meanwhile, we're not doing any CPU work. We're not doing any disk work. We're just waiting. If we look up at the processes graph, we can see that there are two processes that run for about the same amount of time. Again, there's a ninja version of this where you can go look at what threads are waiting on what threads, but most of the time you don't need that. We can just sort of figure it out by association. So can anybody read those processes that seem to correspond to the runtime of the group policy client? GPScript and Notepad. I don't really get it. What does that mean? So if you go look in the process table, which we've done a couple of times now, you should feel okay about that, or do the command line equivalent of printing out the processes and their dependencies, we can see that, in fact, the group policy instance of SVC host launched GPScript, which is the thing that runs startup and logon scripts, which launched Notepad. And then they sat there for 10 minutes. What the what? We can get the command line, again, out of the process summary table, or this is the command line equivalent. What's the command argument to Notepad? What kind of file is this? Why is Notepad opening a VB script? So in this environment, they had got this good idea, what seems like a good idea, to associate VBS files with Notepad. So if a user double-clicked on a VBS file on their desktop, instead of running, which is what it does by default, which is pretty dangerous, it would just open in Notepad. PowerShell does this by default. So they said, well, let's push out the file association to everybody, all clients, all servers, enterprise-wide, so that VBS is associated with Notepad. And all hell broke loose. Not only were all of their machines, you know, suddenly took 13 minutes to log on, which again, to this day, this company is known as Black Thursday because nobody could get any work done, but servers, everywhere where there was an unqualified reference to a VBS file that didn't have a process name before it, like CScript, crazy things happened. So a lesson learned there is don't rely on file associations for enterprise automation. Be specific. If you want something to run under CScript, tell it that you want it to run under CScript. Oh, great question. The question is, why did it stop eventually? Because there is a timeout for group policy scripts. And can anybody guess what that timeout is? So this is another lesson learned here. 10 minutes is pretty generous. If you have a script that actually needs 10 minutes to run, you've got a pretty bad script. Yes, question?
Didn't they notice on Black Thursday all of a sudden their drive mappers were failing?
You know, I don't remember, but there was so much chaos. I mean, there was other stuff that was breaking, like SQL servers were going down because of the file associate. I mean, there was a lot of other stuff that was breaking that the drive mappings may not have risen to that level. But that's a great point. That would have been a good troubleshooting insight.
Other questions?
Yes, other questions.
We're good? No? Okay.
Okay. So you might want to consider in your environment reducing that 10-minute timeout just in case you ever have a script that hangs, because it will hang for 10 minutes. So the Notepad example is a little bizarre. The real takeaway here is it's a 10-minute timeout anytime I log on or a startup script hangs. That assumes you're in synchronous mode. Again, if you're in asynchronous mode, all this stuff happens in the background and nobody cares how long it takes. All right, I've got to get Vadim on the wire here, so I'm going to just show you one very fast example to close it out. This company was piloting Windows 7, and things were going okay, but they had a very unique CIO. Can't quite think of the right adjectives, but I could just say everyone was terrified of the CIO. This was a very loud, aggressive person, and the CIO hated, really, really hated his Windows 7 pilot machine. Because whenever he would start it, he couldn't log on for a couple of minutes, two coffees worth, and it would get really hot, and the fan was blowing like crazy. Now, some of you already know which part of the machine this corresponds to, right? Which resource are we exhausting? Any guesses? Right, CPU.
Yep.
So let's go see. This should be easy enough. We'll just go to the CPU graph and see what the hot process is. Okay, yeah, high CPU, just what we were expecting from the high fan activity. We go to the process graph, and the process is? Oh. Well, now what? Kill SVC host. Can we put that in a KB article? So this is where you need stacks. As any good Mark Rusinovich presentation will tell you, oftentimes knowing the process isn't enough. You need to know what the process is doing. And a great way to tell you what the process is doing or what component within a process is doing something, especially for shared processes like system, SVC host, Outlook, IE, IIS, anything that can host other things, stacks are a great way to figure out which thing inside there is busy. So you can just drill down. This tool set supports call stacks, and it will gather them for you. So all you do is drill down, and I'll zoom in on this. It zooms in further a little later, but I want to walk down it with you. We can see that there's some overhead stuff here, and it's aggregating stacks across threads, across processes to see across the whole machine what functions did we spend the most time in. And down here, we start to get into something interesting. All the other stuff is overhead. WebM core, any guesses as to what component of the system that corresponds to? What service? Remember, this is SVC host. Yes, WMI. It's built around the WebM standard. Okay, so it's the WMI service that's busy. Well, what part of the WMI service is busy, and what is it doing? It's this bottom line here, which I actually have a zoom on, so I'll do that. Rep DRVFS, perform all validations. That's doing some kind of a validation. I don't really know what that means, but it's killing my machine, and it's making my CIO scream at me. So you can go to the file properties of rep DRVFS, and it turns out it is the WMI repository driver, if you hadn't guessed that already. And we use our favorite search engine, high CPU WMI setup. In fact, this search also works if you do all kinds of variants of it, if you include the file name, if you don't include the file name. The first hit is this guy. There's a really important hotfix for WMI that solves a really big performance issue that affects startup and logon. And actually, Vadim is going to mention that as well. Let me cut myself out of this here. I'm glad you enjoyed those. And now, please welcome Vadim Arakulov.
All right.
Man, that's a tough act to follow. All right, so I'm really here today to tell you a story, our experience over at MSIT with the boot performance optimization initiative that we have, and we like to call it Power On to Productivity Initiative. So about 18 months ago, that's where we really start to engage and look at boot performance internally at Microsoft. And to be honest, it was Matt's premier field engineering team and one of their offerings that they provide, which is Windows Desktop Risk Assessment, that actually highlighted the problem for us. Initially, we were looking at different areas, but the boot performance really was the area that was impacted. After identifying a problem with the boot performance, we
not only we identified the problem with the boot performance, we were also able to dig in and identify specific problem areas in our environment. And so if you look at our environment, we basically didn't differentiate much from the examples that you guys looked at today. For example, our biggest problem was high disk I/O utilization. We had issues with synchronous policies. We had issues with slow service start times. So let's take a look at each area a little bit more in detail and see what we found. So this is an example of a high disk I/O. In this scenario, we have a freshly installed Microsoft IT Windows 7 image on a brand new machine that is fully configured with all the bells and whistles, domain joined. And if you look at the disk I/O utilization on this machine, we are basically at 170 seconds of 100% CPU utilization during the boot process. By looking at disk I/O a little bit more in depth, we actually found that the top disk I/O consumers were applications such as forefront endpoint protection, which we use for our antivirus, link or communicator at the time, and then various WMI callers. The other area that was highlighted during the engagement was the synchronous policies. And as you can see, we noticed that a lot of clients in our enterprise were going through the synchronous policies. In this case, we were actually able to identify a policy that was causing this specific behavior as a policy that had a software installation package or flag. But actually, the funniest story behind it is that there was actually no payload attached to the GPO. So this was MSIT inflicted problem.
Trust me, we all got on the phone and called very quickly.
The last problem I want to show you guys is really it's slow service start time. And as you can see, we have application virtualization. In our case, it was application virtualization client service that caused a delay of entire auto startup group. And if you see, in this scenario, we had the service starting for 90 seconds. Cause of this one was actually a WMI query that application virtualization client was running to gather system information in order for service to start. And I don't know if you guys know, but WMI queries, as we just seen from Matt's example, are fairly expensive to run on boot. They tend to hang once in a while and then cause this type of behavior. So let's now take a look at some of the remediation steps that we were able to take and actually resolve those issues.
If you don't mind.
Yeah.
I just wanted to clarify that, you know, we're calling ourselves out here because we dog food all kinds of beta, you know, Microsoft stuff. And so I want to, you know, on the one hand, I want to go ahead and call ourselves out, but on the other hand, I want to be fair to the Forefront teams and the Link teams. Right. Forefront, for example, is actually much better in terms of boot performance than its competitors from the data that I've been shown. Even so, it was consuming a lot of I/O at disk, a lot of I/O, and we were able to make some progress on that. So
we
just want to set some context around that.
We also took this information on AppFi and we brought it back, and it's part of our new package accelerators. And we use this, again, dog fooding internally, to reduce the time it takes to push out our packages by nearly 70%. So this was really critical when we were testing it internally to make up for the next few versions. So.
Yeah, basically, by having that information, we were able to take that information and actually work with the product teams to identify the root causes and issues to drive the product optimization. In the case of actually Link, the issue was, once again, another MSIT-inflicted misconfiguration. We actually had client-side logging enabled on every single client machine for Link. To just put that in perspective, it actually generated about a gig of log files on each reboot. So now you can understand why our disk I/O was saturated by Link, and Link was on top of it. To be honest with you, it's not the usual configuration that people will run. But like Steven said, we do dog food our own products. And during the dog fooding process, those files really helped us a lot in finding bugs or debugging stuff. But once the product shipped and we released to production, nobody from the services team actually went back and disabled that feature. Also worked with the Forefront team. That actually took a little bit more work, and we actually were able to drive product improvements in a way of file exclusions, where it actually does less scans during the boot. And then they also introduced... they optimized the image to do less reads during the boot. So by implementing those two fixes around disk I/O, you can see the difference. It's the same machine, optimized with the two fixes. So we optimized the image to implement the fixes in, and you see the difference. We went from 170 seconds of continuous 100% disk I/O down to 68 seconds. At the end of the day, it made a huge impact on our boot. Similar thing with the synchronous policy. So we were able to identify that, hey, here's this. In this case, and I don't know how you guys are familiar with direct access. Those policies were related to direct access, which actually are not even supposed to be running in the synchronous mode. Somebody who was creating a policy accidentally clicked the flag and never paid attention. Deployed it out, once again, MSIT, misconfiguration. Deployed the policies out, we yanked them back, made a quick fix, redeployed them out, 40-second boot improvement for affected clients. And the last example I want to show you here today is here's that same AppV service after we actually worked with the product team and had them use a different mechanism to collect required data. So at this point, they're no longer using a WMI query for AppV. The cool thing about this specific, this is where we were before. So this is basically, our image was booting in about 1.5 copy cups. By introducing those fixes, three fixes, we were able actually to drive down boot performance of our image down to 77 seconds, which made a huge impact for our customers, which is basically our own employees. And to be honest with you, for Microsoft IT guys, it's a big win because we're not necessarily the most popular guys in the company. Another point I want to make is the fixes that we did with AppV and Forefront are really special for me because they didn't just impact us specifically. They impacted you guys, our customers, who are using those products today. So this is basically where we at today. In the last 18 to 12 months, this is where we were able to make some improvements, changes in our environment, drive some product improvements. And one area I want to call out specifically is you can see the proactive. That's the area where I think we made the biggest investment and will pay the biggest dividends for us. You can go ahead and fix issues in production, but as long as you keep introducing them and you don't, you know, test or you don't have those floodgates, you will be going in this never-ending cycle. We actually were able to implement new processes in place where our engineering and product teams are required to test their product for potential boot impact, performance impact. And require them to get the approval before we let them deploy this out to our customers. Furthermore, we're actually working with our product teams to drive boot performance testing early in the development cycles. And what we found out by working with the product teams that they do actually test for boot. The problem is they really don't test for boot in the enterprise environment. They test on the clean image, without any antiviruses, not a domain join machine. And you know what? Yeah, if you install an application and it takes a lot of disk I/O, you don't really see an impact. But all of a sudden, you install this application on the machine, that actually a domain join that has a BitLocker, has direct access enabled, and all the bells and whistles, and all of a sudden, that impact increases. So that was the biggest area. I feel like we made a lot of progress in this area. With a lot of work being done around our image, we actually started to shift our focus a little bit on the production environment. How do we baseline our live production machines? How we track boot performance when we introduce new software, new services into it? And, you know, basically, we made a lot of progress in this area over the last six to eight months. So what I want to do is I want to show you the last couple of slides just as a sample size of what we were able to do in the production environment. So this one is boot phases by disk report. And I bet you guys can guess which ones are SSDs and which ones are rotationals.
So these are those same boot phases we were seeing in Windows Performance Analyzer. But now we've taken all that data and stuck it in SQL. And we can generate these kinds of reports with correlations. And actually, if you go down the line, at the top are the 5400 RPM drives, in the middle are the 7200s, and at the bottom are the SSDs. Huge, huge impact.
Here is the last one I'm going to show you. So, and I talked about, hey, we actually spend a lot of time trying to identify and figure out, hey, what policies we have in the synchronous mode. We actually have a policy that it will take an act of God basically to deploy a synchronous policy at Microsoft. But we still, as you can see, 36% of our users are going through the synchronous policy logon. And, you know, as you can see, we still have some work to be done here. But in the same way, I feel that we can take some of this data and drive some of that feedback into our product teams and hopefully look at some of the features that do require synchronous policy and maybe move away from that requirement in the future.
Yeah, and to clarify there, so why is this 36% as opposed to 0 or 100? You know, is it on or is it off? So there's the setting where you can force synchronous mode that we referred to earlier, but there are also cases where synchronous mode gets turned on automatically because you're using a feature of Windows that requires it, like group policy preferences drive maps or like folder redirection. And so that's the goal now, is to try to figure out how do we, you know, deliver these features or deliver equivalent functionality without getting people into synchronous mode. So that's a cool next step that we'll be working on.
All right, and with that, I'll turn it over back to Matt for closing.
So, value of the session.
Nice. High five.
All right, so a few last notes, and then we'll let everybody go. So any quick questions? If not, we'll let everybody go. Yes? The 80K kit, yep.
Yes. Yeah, in fact, it keeps running. It keeps tracing for a couple of minutes after you've logged on so that you can see all that post-boot activity.
Yep.
To clarify, I think we'll probably skip the last couple of slides. It's some information about what's changing in Windows 8 and more information about where you can get the ADK and more information how you can get in contact with us. If you want that stuff, just download the slide deck.
Right.
But for now, let's just switch to questions and let people that need to go.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, great question.
Log off and re-log on was the question.
Yeah, so the question is, does it work for other scenarios other than boot and log on? And yeah, it actually works for anything. Like, you can analyze just launching an application. It doesn't even have to be an on-off transition or a log on. You can just say go, and then do something, and then hit stop. The tricky ones are the on-off transitions, because you have to have the trace that survives a reboot. And so for those, it has special logic and special handling to do boot, shut down, suspend, hibernate. If you wanted to specifically do a not first log on, was that your scenario? So like a second log on? Log off takes a long time. Yeah, so what you'd do is you'd either just do a shutdown trace and let the log off be part of that, because it already knows how to do a shutdown trace, or you'd have like two sessions going and you'd start the trace in one and then log off the other. Either way.
Young lady in the red in the back there.
Yeah, so what about a terminal server environment?
Yeah. So,
the question was about terminal services.
Yeah, the question is about terminal server. It's really about the same question. Can you decouple this from boot? And the answer is yes. You can trace anything. You just have to, it doesn't necessarily have special logic for terminal server. You would just create one session and start a trace and then let it run while some other people were logging on.
So, but there's no way to
So there's automation, but it's client-centric, or you can build your own automation. All this stuff is exposable at command line. So like the slides that Vadim showed you at the end, that's all automation that we built. We just built PowerShell scripts that wrap this stuff to automate the scenarios that we wanted. Could build something like that.
Another thing to check out is also use AGMP, the Advanced Group Policy Management Tool, which will go through and take a look at your policies and what may be canceling each other out and creating some issues also that you can also run on those machines, which should help you too. I got about two more, and then we'll say thanks, and we'll be hanging out down near the bottom.
How big is the download? Because at the hotel, we got about 1,200 baud.
The question is, how big is the download? Because at the hotel, we have about 1,200 baud. So it's one of those selective downloaders where you download like the initial package, and then depending on which parts you select, it downloads the rest of it. If you download the whole 80K, it's huge, because it contains all kinds of stuff. So the piece that you want, if you're going for a selective download, is download that first piece, and then when it asks you what other pieces you want to download, the sub-component that you want is called the Windows Performance Toolkit. That's what has all these tools. Windows Performance Toolkit.
Also, if you do it tonight when everybody's out drinking, it will be a lot faster.
Also, your analysis improves.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So we'll do one more question, and then we'll thank everybody, and we'll be up in the front if you have any additional ones. Yes, sir.
There's a lot. The question is, how has the Windows Performance Toolkit changed since the Windows 7 version and the Windows 8 80K version? Actually, lots of changes. The Windows Performance Analyze that I was showing here is actually the Windows 7 version. I did that for consistency. There's actually a whole new version of Windows Performance Analyzer that's very shiny. And there's also all the other stuff, like all the automation that they've built around. There's the Windows Assessment Console that you can, you know, assess machines in the lab. So they've done a huge amount of work.
A great thing is also, if you're a big fan, there are areas where you can generally watch my blog and some of the others where we'll talk about a beta. It's a great chance to get on Connect, download this, and be part of it and say, hey, here's what it does well, love to see, and you could be part of the development of this tool. We do this around a lot of our tools like that in our solutions accelerators, ACT, MAP, ADK, et cetera. So it's a great chance to get involved and help us to make the tool better with your own expertise.
All right, so we're going to be up here for a while.
Thank you very much, everybody.
We're going to dinner, so good job, guys. Good job.
Nicely done.